Senate Health and Human Services Committee for Wednesday. Thank you for being here. We have on our agenda today the two bills that we're going to hear, Senate File 119 for, presented by Senator Rosen and Senate File 14 by Senator Wieger. And so I'd like to ask Senator Rosen if you would please join us at the table, and we'll take the testimony on the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and fellow members. This is my first bill of the year. This bill is Senate File 119.
Senator Rosen, can I interrupt you one second? I just want to know we have a quorum. Thank you. Go ahead.
It is a community paramedics inclusion on the list of community health workers. And, Mr. Chair, I have the A4 amendment I'd like to move, the delete all amendment.
Senator Rosen offers the A4 amendment. I'll give members a chance to take a look. This is a delete all amendment. It's an author's amendment, so I think our custom is to defer to the author to allow her to get the bill in the shape she wishes. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill is amended.
Well, Mr. Chair, and just I will go into the A4 amendment more thoroughly, but just to let you know, as you can tell, it's A4. Amendment. So there's been a lot of work, and special thanks to Ms. Kavanaugh for working on this. There was some angst on the original proposal, but there has been a tremendous amount of work going on to make this much better bill. And I think it is it's a very good bill as far as the intention of what the community paramedic is supposed to do. The concept of the community paramedic is an excellent example of continuing our work in this state on health care reform. To address the critical shortages of health care professionals and services in rural and remote areas and the misuse of the EMS system, the Community Health Care and Emergency Cooperative developed the Community Paramedic Training Program. It's a program developed by our own Mayo Clinic, but today is not implemented in Minnesota, but it has many networks already in place throughout the world. And the concept is very simple. You connect the underutilized resources to underserved populations. So you're expanding the roles of the EMS, the experienced EMS personnel, to provide health services and advanced levels of care appropriate to prevention, emergencies, evaluation, care, triage, disease management, mental health, and referrals. And one of the strengths of the community paramedic is the adaptability to the needs of the local community. Services provided will vary depending on what is approved by local ambulance medical director. It is truly a physician-driven program that will collaborate with the community's public health system and other providers' overall care plan. In Fort Worth, Texas, a community paramedic program has been in place and was initiated to reduce inappropriate ER visits by a group of 64 identified individuals. And they found that a lot of the people call 911 because they have no other health care or primary care outlet, and the EMS becomes their primary care provider. Whether for cardiac arrest patients, diabetics, or patients dealing with a mental health issue, and the list can go on, the CP program can reduce hospital ER visits and 911 calls, and they found this in Fort Worth, Texas, by 67%. It was a savings of $640,000 in inappropriate ER visits. The federal health care policy has reimbursement disincentives for hospitals that readmit patients with the same diagnosis for which they are treated within the previous month. In addition, under current state law, for MA services rendered on or after January 1st of 2011, the commissioner shall include as part of the performance targets a reduction in the state's emergency room utilization rate for health care program enrollees by a measurable rate of 5% from the plan's utilization rate for the previous calendar year. And this applies to managed care plans and county-based purchasing plans. So the delete all amendment, Mr. Chair and members, basically does this. It identifies, number one, the community paramedic in statutes. And it requires that they have a minimum of 2 years full-time experience as a paramedic to be eligible to enroll in the CP training program. The candidates must successfully complete an approved training program and accredited and offered by the MNSCU system. And to date, there is Hennepin Technical College and Eden Prairie has this accreditation. Number four, the community paramedic services may only be provided through licensed ambulance services. And this is why, number five, the payment for services will be made to the licensed ambulance service based on a fee schedule determined by DHS with input from the EMS community. And if you go to the A4 amendment, members and Mr. Chair, to page 2, line 22, or actually line 19, it talks about these services and that DHS will have a report on January 15th of 2012. And it says these services shall not be covered by medical assistance until further legislative action is taken. And that's why this bill has no fiscal note. So it is still a work in progress, but I think it's a very good example of the direction we should be going.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen. If I can just ask a question about this point. I'm assuming this language has been included because you don't want a fiscal note that would cost money. But my recollection of the Community Services Health Workers Bill was that it had savings. And those savings weren't huge savings because they didn't expect we'd have so many of these people all at once. But it did have savings, and I'm sure by now, because we have more of them, there are even more savings going into the system. And so I'm just suggesting you think a little bit about whether you want this in the bill, because if this service can save money, why wouldn't we want to see savings, especially at this time?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Berglund. And I believe if I could introduce Dr. Wilcox, and maybe we can address that a little bit later,
sure,
the rest of it, that'd be fine, because I think that's a very valid point. Like I said, this has been a work in progress, and as of this morning, the language has been changed to address that fiscal note. The care for which these EMT CPs will be trained must be approved by the ambulance services physician medical director, and the discipline will be handled by the EMS regulatory board in the same manners as a paramedic. So basically, with this bill, the goal is to provide additional care through existing resources. And, Mr. Chair, I have Dr. Mike Wilcox, who is the ambulance medical director for a large group of small rural ambulance services and also is a physician down in New Prague with me right now. And perhaps you can address that question, too. Welcome, Mr. Wilcox.
Dr. Wilcox, welcome to our committee. Could you please identify yourself for the record, and then let's have your testimony.
Certainly. Thank you, Senators. And let me say it's a pleasure to be here this morning. I appreciate this opportunity. My name is Mike Wilcox. I'm a physician, family practice physician, who has been practicing in a rural community, southern part of the state, New Prague, since 1973. Spent my entire career in that rural setting. I've had a unique opportunity during this time to do both family medicine and focus in on some emergency care work in the rural settings as well. And as a part of that, I have also provided medical direction for a number of EMS services throughout the southern part of the state. As such, when this opportunity to talk about this program came forth, I was one of the advocates, certainly as a medical director of these groups, to step up and be a champion for it. I can tell you that spending my time in the rural part of the state, providing primary care for folks within the rural communities, has been a unique opportunity for me and a great experience for me. Now, unfortunately, however, it does appear that the number of physicians who are stepping up and doing this kind of work in a rural setting is on the decline. And unfortunately, we have a large number of people in the rural communities who are having a tough time accessing health care. And we've tried to adjust to this need by training nurse practitioners, by training PAs to go out and perhaps do some of this work with us. But unfortunately, even those numbers are down. And it does not appear in the future that we're going to have enough primary care physicians or extenders to take care of the rural population's health care needs, especially in an economically positive way. So looking a bit outside of the box, I, as a physician, looked at the resources we already have in our rural communities in the area of health care, and with consultation with some other folks who have a similar interest to mine, came up with the thought that why don't we utilize our resource people already in place in these rural communities to perhaps provide an even greater role in the work they could do to provide health care to our citizens. And it seemed to me in particular our EMS providers could do this with us. They could become a part of our health care team. They could work with our other health care providers in a rural setting to provide the needs of our citizens in these areas that up to this point have had access problems. I'm especially concerned because, as you know, our population base is getting older. A large number of folks in the rural settings are elderly. They have a large number of chronic disease processes in particular that need some assistance as far as management goes. We have a large number of folks who are dealing with issues related to congestive heart failure, chronic lung disease issues, diabetic conditions, falls that can lead to fractures and disabilities from that. And we need additional health care providers within these communities to assist with this management. In particular, it would be terrific if we could have these providers actually go into the homes of some of these folks who have a tough time traveling from their homes to clinics. And if you look at what our EMS providers can do in a rural setting, for sure they have done remarkable work over the years in answering 911 calls and taking care of patients in an emergent need. But they have downtime. And during these downtimes, they're already in position in these communities, and they're waiting for a call to come in, an emergent call. Why not use these folks as community paramedics to go out into the communities and provide this health care we're talking about, have a stable of patients that they can take care of, they can watch over, they can visit in their homes, they can assist with medication managements, and so on. And I would emphasize that these paramedics would not be functioning under necessarily a regional medical director's licensure. They would be a part of the medical team of that community. So indeed, if they were reporting to the home of a patient who had a local physician or a local nurse practitioner, a PA, that was watching over their care in that clinic setting, if they noted a problem, they would contact those local providers and coordinate a care plan with those local providers. So they truly would become a part of the medical plan that we're looking so diligently to develop in this state and nationally. We're also faced with the dilemma, of course, that Medicare is no longer going to pay for recurring hospitalizations for some of our patients with chronic disease processes. And it seems to me that these providers could assist in helping patients to manage their issues at home and preventing the need for hospitalization for them, which is better for the patient, and quite frankly, it's better for us in the healthcare arena economically as well. So for all of these reasons, I really am a strong supporter of the community paramedic program. Now, I'd like to mention just a couple of instances where we've actually utilized these providers in our state over the last year and a half. We were fortunate. We received a FLEX grant in 2007 from the Department of Health, Rural Office Division, to actually train a pilot group of these folks to do this type of work for us in certain venues. And we were able, in particular, to train 8 seasoned paramedics to do this work in certain types of settings. Now, I can tell you, I have provided medical direction for this group, and they are a terrific group of individuals who have done remarkable work, and they have done this educational process beyond what they were expected to do in their role as an EMS provider. We have used them in several situations in a county in which I do some medical direction, Scott County. And they have actually worked with me. We have in that county a partnership with the Mattawakoning Sioux community to provide a free clinic for folks within the county who cannot afford health care. And we use a mobile clinic that the Mattawakoning Sioux have provided for us to travel around the county every other week And we see patients who can't afford health care there. We find ways in which we can access health care for them. And we have utilized these CP candidates to work with me to provide care for these folks over the last year and a half. It's been a terrific learning opportunity for me as a medical director. It's been a great learning opportunity for the CP candidates who have done this as part of their clinical rotation, and it's provided a great service for the folks within Scott County who cannot access health care in any other manner. It seems to me that that might be one of the ways in which these community paramedics can do their work in other counties throughout the state as well. I also believe that they can be heavily involved in educational opportunities within the county that would help to prevent disease processes from progressing. They'll be very instrumental in, I believe, educational opportunities in preventing trauma throughout the counties in which they do their work. They're heavily schooled and skilled in those areas. They have a number of unique qualities that will allow them to be part, they're already part of the communities. They live in those communities, and they have a really good feel for what the health care needs of their communities. They can assess those needs, they can go back, and they can develop a plan that addresses those needs, and then working with the other health care providers in the county, develop a plan that keeps their county and their communities healthy. So I really feel this type of provider will give a very unique opportunity for us to further develop the medical home concept and keep our folks healthy at home, outside of the hospital settings, young and old. Thank you.
Dr. Wilcox, can you, I hope, if not you, someone else, maybe describe for us, how does the bill get paid? How is the cost of the care that you're providing or would provide under this bill, how does that get taken care of? Is that part of the medical assistance program, or what's the structure? How does that work?
I can tell you, up to this point, Senator, the way in which these folks who have done this work have been paid have been through grants, quite frankly. And, you know, we aren't the only state in the United States that's looking at this program. We have programs developing Colorado, North Carolina, South Carolina. We have programs similar to this internationally. They use a provider of this type in Canada. They use a provider of this type in Australia as well. The folks within the United States who have been part of these pilot projects have been paid by means of grant monies. And grant monies are fine as long as they're there. The problem that we encounter is once the grants run out, we no longer have an opportunity or ability to pay these folks for the services they provide. So we need to find a revenue stream that allows them to be reimbursed. And that's why I certainly appreciate the fact that you folks here in our state are looking at ways in which reimbursement can occur for these folks so that the process can continue and be an ongoing one.
And Dr. Wilcox, just so I understand, so currently the thing that you're describing in Scott County is being funded through a county grant, I assume, of some kind, and I take your point that grants are not certain, especially in this environment, to continue. But what is the mechanism that you're contemplating going forward as a more permanent source of revenue? If we implement this as a statewide program, what is the structure that we would have to contemplate to fund it?
Well, I believe, you know, as it stands right now, the CP candidates have actually been working with me one-on-one as a part of their training, as a part of their clinical experience. What I found, though, unique is they keep coming back for more. I mean, they technically have completed their clinical hours that have been requested of them to do this work, but they truly have invested in the community concept, and they keep coming back to do more clinical work in this venue as a result of that. I think in the future, however, the counties can certainly find ways to partner with other organizations within their areas to find a way to fund these folks as they do their work. And in particular, it seems to me that if indeed this bill passes and reimbursement comes down through a local EMS agency, they would find a way to interact with that agency if they needed that kind of a provider to assist them with their work in the area of public health or whatever, or home health care. They could find a way to make that work, and economically a sound way at that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen, did you want to respond?
To your question.
Yes.
In Section 3, Paragraph B, payment for services provided by a community paramedic must be ordered by the ambulance medical director must be part of a patient care plan and must be billed by an eligible MA-enrolled provider that employs or contracts with the community paramedic. And those services, and if you go down to paragraph C, the commissioner will submit the list of services to be covered by MA to this committee, to you, Mr. Chair, and these members, by next year, January 15th, 2012. And at this point, it'll be more of just, of course, it's not a mandate. It's a community involvement, as Dr. Wilcox said, figuring out who are the, well, they sometimes call them frequent flyers, who's using the EMS, expanding the medical home concept of addressing people that perhaps just had heart surgery, and you know, there's a startling percentage of them are back in the ER room shortly afterwards, or somebody who's not addressing their diabetic care needs quickly. So the community, the director, can gather all this information, and that will be a part of the list and the services rendered. So does that answer your question, too?
Partially, but Senator Berglund has a question. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rose and I had a little side conversation with DHS while you were presenting, and I guess the issue is that if the bill said that these folks would get paid for the same services that are provided by community health workers today, there would be a savings in your bill. But the bill is broader than that, and I'm not, you know, this is your bill. I do support it, but you know, maybe you want the scope to be broader, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't have that list of services that they would be paid for today rather than waiting until next year. If you wanted to add those to the bill, then there probably would be a savings in the bill, and I would think we could use those savings this year rather than next year.
Good thing.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Berglund. There, like I said, there was quite a bit of discussion about the bill with the community health workers and the MNA, and this is what was agreed upon. I'm not saying I would absolutely take the approach that you're thinking on, and let's just get this done, but this is a compromise, but I'm open for suggestions. I do have Mr. Buck McLaren here, too, that could maybe address the subject a little further.
Thank you.
I could quickly, Mr. Chair. Buck McAlpin, I'm the legislative chair for the Minnesota Ambulance Association. Senator Berglund, correct? We met with it's about 11 different drafts of this bill, met with all of the impacted folks we could imagine to discuss it. And the most important thing we wanted to do was be sure we came up with an appropriate reimbursement number. We're not sure the community health worker one's too high or too low. There's such a range of what the health plans do. And when we look at our footprint in rural Minnesota, obviously 75% of it's Medicare or Medicaid mix. A lot of it sits in the PMAP where there's some opportunity still to be reimbursed. And with the HMOs, we've talked to the health plans about this idea. So we thought as we train the next 6 or 8 months, Dr. Wilcox and the folks at the Minsky Colleges have some programs coming up that we would come back. This bill doesn't go into effect till July anyway. Come back right away in the session next year and say, you know what, after some things that Colorado has done, Nebraska has a program, South Carolina, we've got some really good data over what this should do. Because after we learned a lot from the community health workers. They do some of what we do, but this will be a lot different role, especially in rural Minnesota with some more well care stuff. And we thought at this time, we didn't know if the fiscal note would save $10, $10,000. We understand a savings to the budget would be nice. But we wanted to be sure we had time to come back with an appropriate number to work with our partners at DHS to get an accurate reimbursement amount.
And Mr. Chairman, if
go
I
ahead,
could
Senator
just
Berglund.
Have one
yes.
more follow-up.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your indulgence. You know, y'all are sitting around talking about this bill in a vacuum because, you know, we could be cutting your rates this year to balance the budget. And maybe some of the things you want to do that go beyond what the community health worker does should be reimbursable, and maybe there should be a study and a recommendation about that. But, I mean, when people sit around and are kind of in tough battles behind the scenes, and that holds up savings that we could have in the budget that would prevent rate cuts, I get upset with that.
I don't know if you want to comment or any on that, but I did. I just wanted to clarify, and Senator Rosen, you mentioned paragraph B starting on 2.12. And it talks about that the care ordered by a director, part of the patient care plan, must be billed and so forth. Am I correct in understanding that the billing is going to go to, could go to different entities, could go to an insurance plan, it could go to medical assistance, could go to... and have my question is, are the people who are prospectively looking at being billed understanding what this is and accepting of this, or is that still something that is being negotiated? I'm not clear, I guess, on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's still it is still a service that's directed by a physician. So there, I mean, it is still directed by the medical director. So it is... you know, it's the same as any physician visit or call. It's basically just expanding the scope. And to Senator Berglund's questions, I understand. I probably would have taken a little more aggressive approach with it also, but you know how this place works, and we tend to try to address all the issues that are brought forward. But perhaps we will see a really solid savings going forward, and this will be implemented. It's probably being implemented in many various ways. It's just the payment structure that has to be addressed.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Just one response, Senator Rosen. Just because a physician orders something doesn't mean that it's going to get paid for when somebody else is delivering the service. I know that is the vision we have for payment reform down the road, and you know, eventually we do hope to get there in a bigger way than we are now. But right now, you know, it's just like those nurses that we heard about when we were talking about health care reform in 2007 and 2008 that were working up in Duluth, and they were calling patients every day and helping them monitor their blood pressure and their weight, and they were keeping 80% of them out of the hospital, and they were losing $1 million a year. It's because those nurses weren't eligible to get paid for through the reimbursement system. And that's why, again, I would just encourage people to look at whether or not, at least in this iteration of the bill, you could get paid for at least those things that the community health services workers get paid for. And then if you want to go beyond that, have a report come back to us next year. Because then at least you'll have something that people will get paid for that will generate savings in the budget.
Mr. Chair, perhaps we should have somebody from the community health worker representative up to the table to address Senator Berglund's comments. I think that would be.
Is there someone from the community health
assistance
in the audience? Anybody here? I'm not seeing anybody.
No.
Guess not. Okay. Senator Higgins, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask Senator Rosen to pull her microphone up.
Sorry.
Senator
Wade over there.
Senator, I am just in. Yeah.
Senator Sharon, did you have a question?
If I may ask Senator Berglund a question. I'm hearing your message that there's a set of services that could be, that are fewer than are described here, but could be immediately begun, and we could expand beyond that in the future. Those services are reimbursed now? Are they allowed for reimbursement, and by whom?
Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon, yes, they're reimbursable through the medical assistance program to community health workers. And because they're doing these services, and instead of having sometimes they're more effective because of language issues, cultural issues, but also otherwise sometimes those services would have to be provided by a person that would be up the stream further in terms of their license. And so it's really saving money because you don't have to make that level of reimbursement.
Thank you.
And Senator Rosen, are there other people that you wanted to comment on the bill? I know we've got some other testifiers who would like to speak.
Discussion, Mr. Chair, members. And I do think what Senator Berglund was saying is very valid. There are a lot of discussions back here. Would it be possible just to lay this over and continue the discussion? Because, like I said, I think she has a valid reasoning there, but we do need to hear from some other people.
Certainly, we could do that. Do we want to hear? We've got some other people on at least my list of who wanted to make comments on the bill, and I'd certainly want to invite them to speak if they wish. I have Linda Hamilton from the Nurses Association and Renee Cronquist from the Board of Nursing, who've indicated they'd like to comment on the bill. So, Ms. Hamilton, or welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Linda Hamilton. I am a registered nurse practicing at Children's Hospitals and Clinics in Minneapolis. I am here in my role as president of the Minnesota Nurses Association. We represent 20,000 nurses in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Senate File 119. The MNA strongly supports increasing access to health care for all Minnesotans, and we support the role of community health worker in helping to reach the underserved populations. Conceptually, we support the idea of the community paramedic, but we have a number of concerns with the legislation as it is currently written. We create new roles for the health care workers that we believe policymakers should raise a number of questions to ensure if the goal of patient safety is met. These questions include: what is the education and training requirements of the community paramedic? Who is the appropriate licensed healthcare professional that will supervise the community paramedic? How is the care being coordinated within the existing healthcare delivery system? And how do we avoid duplication of services and payment for these new roles? At this point, we do not believe that the legislation adequately answers the questions to garner our support. We are very concerned that the paramedics who are trained to stabilize patients for transport do not have the adequate training and background to do chronic disease monitoring and treatment. This bill expands the job functions of the paramedic into the scope of the licensed registered nurse without adequate supervision from a professional nurse. How is the role of a community paramedic not that of a public health nursing? Are they, in fact, practicing nursing without a license? Under the current statute for community health workers, the provision of care is limited to the coordination and patient education. We agree with Senator Berglund that chronic disease monitoring is outside the role currently of the community paramedic, and this should be studied. Allowing community paramedics to do chronic disease management raises a number of questions regarding how the care will be coordinated and supervised. Is it the ER doctor or the medical director who owns the ambulance service that's developing the care plan? Will it be the same community paramedic for each visit? We know that relationships are critical to chronic disease management. At one point, we were informed that this bill was to better utilize the healthcare professionals who had downtime between emergencies. So how can we guarantee the continuity of care for patients when an emergency happens? After all, that is their primary role. Also, the bill requires community paramedics to work under the direct direction of a medical director or physician. While these physicians are trained and qualified in trauma and emergency care, they may not necessarily know the unique needs of the patient, and they do not regularly see or are they knowledgeable in the best practices for any given chronic disease. Finally, we need to be assured that community paramedics are integrated within our current healthcare system and work with other local providers, healthcare homes, public health agencies, and home care agencies, just to name a few. Without clear understanding of the different roles, we feel this bill will further fragment the care of our patients, ambiguity for our consumers and providers alike, and ultimately may result in higher healthcare costs. We understand changes have been made that we haven't fully studied today, but we would like to take the time to work with the stakeholders as this bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hamilton, are there questions for the witness?
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Ms. Hamilton's comments, but there is the A4 amendment that has addressed many of these issues that she brought forward. And the ones that are not addressed is the is there is an accredited course at Hennepin in Eden Prairie there at the Hennepin Technical College for this accreditation. I do not think it fragments our healthcare system at all. I think it actually is another tool to help, especially in these rural areas where access is difficult or more difficult for some of these people. So I would encourage, for someone to take a look at the A4 amendment because there has been a tremendous amount of work on this that has addressed many, many of those needs. That's the physician, the ambulance medical director, a physician. You know, they're physicians. They absolutely know the care of the person and not necessarily a nurse. And you can't really have an EMT be a nurse also. That ruins the whole purpose of trying to reach out to these rural and difficult areas. So this is not for one size fits all. This is for communities that can use this, and I think it's a great option.
Great. Thank you. And Ms. Hamilton.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my father and mom live in Todd County. They are in a rural area. And my father's had a number of chronic illnesses and has been dealing with the pace. I agree that having somebody available to come to the home is important. And I do not believe that there is no role here. But what I also see with my father is a home health nurse that is managing his care when the home health aide comes into the house, calls the nurse who decides which physician do I call. If we have them calling the emergency doctor who then calls the cardiologist who then calls the primary doctor, I do believe that would fragment his care. And I think it's very important to have somebody managing that care. And I do believe that that is the role of a public health nurse. A nurse in public health.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton, and I encourage you to continue to be in discussion with Senator Rosen, and we'll see where we end up here on this. But I also want to give Ms. Cronquist an opportunity to testify as well. Please identify yourself.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Renee Cronquist, and I'm the Director for Practice and Policy at the Board of Nursing. The board just recently became aware of this bill and just seeing the A4 amendment right now. So some of the remarks I had prepared are sort of no longer on point, so I'll be even briefer than I had originally planned to be. I still have a remaining question about what it is that the community paramedic would be permitted or authorized to do. In nursing language, I would call it scope of practice. I don't know if we think that's applicable to this. But as I look at it as it remains, the portion that would amend the 114E to create the credential for the community paramedic does little to describe, again, what they're permitted to do or not do or, again, a scope of practice. Where that language seems to come in is in the portion that talks about the tasks and functions and activities for which they might be reimbursed. So that feels a little incomplete to me. And as I look at the portion of the bill that describes what might be reimbursed, I share Ms. Hamilton's concerns about the ambiguity between those functions and nursing, particularly the description of chronic disease. I see it's called now chronic disease management directives. And I would just suggest that might be better clarified to distinguish that. In the nursing world, we would consider that to be an activity that would happen at the advanced practice, the master's prepared advanced practice nurse level. And so I would just want to make sure that there's alignment between the credentials and preparation of the community paramedic and this really broad and important function. And then finally, related to the credentialing of the community paramedic, I do understand that there's an accredited program. I would question how the individual skill and competence is verified beyond completion of the program. In other words, is there some nationwide examination or something that would verify their credentials so that one could readily understand what it is that you can expect from a community paramedic, and again, how that differs from the practice of nursing.
Thank you, Ms. Cronquist. Are there questions for the witness?
I have one. My question is, does this replace the public health nurse?
Mm-hmm. Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Senator Hall, no, not at all. It complements the health care nurse. And it's just another, like I said, a tool to address these chronic issues, whether it's a diabetic person or somebody that's calling the ambulance or the ER or going to the ER for some mental health issues. It's something that is going to be tailored for individuals that are well known or have issues that can be addressed by this EMT.
Thank you.
Community paramedic. And
Senator Sharon.
May I ask a couple of questions? Senator Rosen, would it, in terms of my visualization of this, against something I'm familiar with, would it be fair to say in a visual sense that I would see this community paramedic similar to a certified nursing assistant in that they are an extender of a defined limited scope of the ability of nurses in a nursing home or in the hospital to extend service. Is that a fair visualization of what the intent of this is?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon. Yes, and also extender of the physician, because they will be under a physician's medical director's purview. So, yeah, that is an extender. It's somebody that is has that relationship with the medical director and with the ER director and all the physicians to know the care of this person. And I should probably let Dr. Wilcox answer that, too. He's been
Dr. Wilcox.
Thank you, Senators. You know, the vision of this provider is actually to fulfill a role in the community where there is a definite health care need that or needs that will need to be addressed. So as these individuals who come from our rural communities go through the training program, to be sure there will be curriculum that they'll be expected to complete, but whether or not they will utilize all the skills that they are provided through this curriculum will depend on what the community needs are, quite frankly. And part of their educational experience will be to go back to their communities, to assess the communities for the health care needs that are there, to develop a plan where these issues can be addressed, and then working with the other health care providers in the community, go back and find a way to make that process work efficiently through this medical home concept. So certainly, each of our CPs may be trained or receive skills in certain areas as part of the curriculum, but they may not be utilizing all these skills as they get back to their home communities. It's all to depend upon what the needs are. To be sure, they will be functioning under a physician's licensure. And I would mention to you that this physician who's going to provide this oversight will have a broad breadth of experience relative to chronic disease management. This individual will not necessarily be a specialist in the area of emergency care necessarily. The thought is that these folks would have a broad breadth of experience in chronic disease management from the point of view of perhaps a primary care provider, so that indeed they can provide very good oversight to these CPs as they get back into the communities and work to develop guidelines and protocols in which they can provide excellent patient care.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments, Dr. Wilcox, but they serve to confuse me more in terms of the question that was answered about the displacement or the replacement of public health nursing. So I think that that's, even though it may be behind the scenes conversation, I really believe in extenders of healthcare services so people have more information, more access. I don't think we want to put barriers in front of that. And to the degree that we have a community paramedic program that could be utilized better, I think we should try to figure out how to make that happen and make it work. But I'm also aware that in the rush to do that, we don't want to either do something that's duplicative, not necessary from that perspective, that's not really an extender, it's a displacer. And we want to make sure that the preparatory, that the scope, what I call the scope as well, is clearly defined, and that the educational curriculum that you've talked about prepares the person to accomplish those things. And so I think that, to the degree that Senator Rosen has agreed to step back from this for a little bit and further dialogue and make sure that language is clear, that that's a good idea. Because I don't think these are minor issues that the Board of Nursing and that the Minnesota Nurses Association are asking for clarification upon.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, and we all know these are difficult times, and there are issues out there that perhaps we have to take a different approach at. And there are certainly needs out in greater Minnesota and the rural areas that need to be perhaps a little more creative. And I know that this bill has been worked extensively with the Minnesota's Nurses Association. I do get a little frustrated with the turf wars and territorial wars, and I think we need to look at things a little more broad. How can we provide services to meet the needs out there? The needs are different out in greater Minnesota and these rural areas. And so, you know, we're taking a punch in a drive to make sure that we lower our costs and still provide the care that these people need without exaggerated cost in the tail end. So if we can all just maybe come to the table a little bit and address those needs, I am somewhat, maybe you hear my frustration, but there has been a lot of work and agreement with the Nurses Association on this bill. The A4 amendment surely purely shows that too. And I think it's worthy of, if we want to just see what communities, what medical directors will come up with, who this would target in those areas, I think it's worthwhile, and not everybody get concerned if it's going to replace a public health care nurse or community health care worker. What is the best for our communities and for our needs out there?
Thank you, Senator Rosen. And I'll let you ask your question, but I'd like to recognize we do have one other bill we want to hear. And I think, Senator Rosen, your preference was that we would lay this over for a bit and give you a chance to explore some of the issues. And is that
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what Senator Berglund brought up, we'll take a look at that and move forward.
But, Senator Sharon, did you have a final?
Well, I just would not want to have the committee, in relationship to Senator Rosen's response, assume that what my message is about not doing what she's talking about. The history of my actions in this committee have been to support alternative methods of meeting health care needs, and I do support that today. And we've had these arguments, but they aren't without some, there has to be some attention paid to the safety of the patient. I just had a meeting this morning about assisted living, where they have unlicensed persons distributing medication and doing all sorts of what is described within the scope of a licensed professional without licenses. These are important issues that this committee needs to be paying attention to. And I know that you are, Senator Rosen. I'm not suggesting that you haven't been working hard on this. So I don't want that to be the message that you heard from me. But I do think that the committee has a responsibility to ask and to make certain that the educational preparation fits what the scope of practice is, and that it is demonstrable, that the person can demonstrate the competency, and that we simply don't say, because these people are out there, let's throw them out into a service area that has a high need.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Duly noted. And you, Senator Rosen, your preference would be to lie it over. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator Rosen. And members will lie this bill over for some further consideration. And thank you for bringing the bill. I'd like to invite Senator Wieger to join us.
made over.
Okay. Wants to do some more work. Good.
Crystal?
Senator Wieger, welcome to our committee, and you have Senate File 14, so please take us through the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate File 14 would provide $50,000 for a personal care attendant pilot project, and I have some author's amendments, and if you could have those distributed and possibly added, then it would be in the form that I'd like you to consider.
Senator Wieger, we have a one amendment. Is it your preference to treat this as an author's amendment and take an amendment?
Yes.
Senator Lori, would you move? Senator Lori moves the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author desires. Any questions? I believe members have the amendment in their packet. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Amendment is adopted. Senator Wieger.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment reflects changes recommended by the Department of Human Services, and we're working with the department as well as the county to try to provide hope for Diana, who's here, and for others that are facing similar challenges. To put a face on the bill, and this is all about love, courage, and hope for Diana, for her family, for others. And it's a case, and you'll hear from her mom very soon, where they, as a family, with the personal care attendant, provide the significant amount of care for their daughter with Crystal and other personal care attendants. You have a handout that has some numbers that, if they didn't provide that, if they went to institutionalization and surgeries, it would be much more expensive. And as we look at outcome-based funding and other incentives, models that can save us money, I offer it in that spirit, but more importantly, to provide hope that Diana and others are able to stay home with their parents as long as that is intended to be. I have testifying Joanne McKenzie, her mom, Crystal Vack, and I, one of the personal care, primary personal care attendant, in place of Victoria Reinhardt, commissioner, who couldn't be here. I have Andrea Zuber, who works in disability services, the manager for the department in Ramsey County for Human Services. There's also a representative from A Chance to Grow. We have information about that. It's that organization formed in the early 80s, located in Minneapolis, provides a number of opportunities for disabled, but working with parents, and that's a very common theme, to try to keep that person at home to develop to their full potential. In this bill, Mr. Chair, it focuses on a pilot project. It looks at some flexibility to get at outcome base to show that we can save money. There's various details in there in terms of the services that would be provided, and you'll hear that soon in the testimony. And I am very hopeful that ultimately today this could be considered as a part of your ultimate omnibus bill, and want to state up front my willingness to work with any interested stakeholder, but most importantly that we not lose sight of why we're here. So with that brief background, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Joanne McKenzie, Diana's mom.
And Senator Wieger, before we do that, I just want to make sure for members and for my purposes that we understand just what your bill is doing. And I've been looking at it, and maybe you could comment, but it's, as I understand it, your bill would propose a grant to be created that would be granted to A Chance to Grow, which is a particular organization.
Yes.
And is that the only organization that would be eligible for this grant?
Mr. Chair, yes.
And then, Senator Wieger, the language establishes the grant, directs that the grant be, the grantee select one or more families, then you have some conditions. Is the intent of this to suggest that there are a number of families that would be eligible for this grant, or only one family, or help us out understand exactly what your bill is trying to accomplish?
Mr. Chair, it's narrowly focused because we know there's limited resources, but at the same time, there's the interest in reform. I believe there's maybe several potential families that are in a similar situation where they're doing their very best at home to have the child at home. In Ramsey County, they didn't know exactly how many might apply. I would believe it would be less than 10 families, but we can have testimony on that later.
And then, Senator Wieger, your bill also calls for a report to be developed based on this project, and your amendment, is that sort of language that helps us to clarify what the report has to speak to, or could you just...
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's an attempt to clarify. It was drafted by the Department of Human Services to accomplish that.
Okay. Members, are there any questions on what Senator Wieger's bill is trying to accomplish? Senator Newman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wieger, if you would very briefly address the amendment a little bit more so that it's clear in my mind as to you know, what it is you're trying to accomplish. And then the second question that I have is, am I correct that it is your request that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, second question first, yes. We'd like to see that as a part of the mix as you come up with the best bill possible. And in terms of the amendment, we just got that. It's from the department, and I told them I wanted to work with them to get something that would be in conformance with federal expectations on reimbursements and the technical part. They are here, and if we could reserve a further technical explanation until we've heard from our primary testifiers, I would appreciate that. I could go through that now, but if we could yield to our testifiers. But it was prepared by the department for conformity.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator Wieger. Let's hear from your testifiers. Joanne McKenzie?
Yes.
Could you please just identify yourself for our tape and then go ahead and present your remarks?
Good morning. My name is Joanne McKenzie. I'm Diana's mom. This is Diana McKenzie. She's my daughter. She's 27 years old. She's fully dependent on cares and needs. She's nonverbal, but she understands everything that is said to her. She was born normal, and then she got sick at the age of 10 months. She had a status seizure, which is a prolonged seizure, and in the result of that, had brain damage. So her diagnosis is athetoid CP. Athetoid means uncontrolled movements. CP means cerebral palsy, and it's an injury to her motor part of her brain. Okay, and I'm going to make this brief. So over the last 25 years, I've taken traditional medicine and alternative medicine and blended them together. Okay, so I've been doing numerous different kinds of programs with Diana, and the therapy that I have done on her is very intensive, and what we're trying to do is retrain the brain to connect the areas that were damaged. And as a result of that, with all the therapy that she has had and keeping her body moving, she has had no surgeries, she's never been hospitalized, she's has a seizure disorder, she's on no medication, she's had no wound care, and she still is improving, and that's the big key. A typical CP child who is 12 years old stops progressing, and Diana continues to progress. And it is because of all of the therapy, and the therapy is very intense, and what we're trying to do is retrain the brain. And I think over all the years, as you can see on your paperwork, We have done our part as a family and have saved taxpayer dollars. That's it.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. Are there any questions for the witness? Thank you for being here today and for bringing your daughter, and we're happy to have her here, and it sounds like you've been doing some remarkable things. I appreciate your attendance. And Senator Wieger, is your wish to have Ms. Van Canyet?
Yes, Crystal Vaconite would be our next testifier. I want to mention in transition also that Diana's proud grandpa, Dave McKenzie, is here as well, and just to say hello. And also, welcome. There's been hundreds of volunteers in our area that have worked with Diana and as volunteers to do what they can. But you're going to hear from you know, some real heroes as well, the personal care attendants that you know devote so much for the rehab. And I'd like to introduce Crystal Vaconite.
All right. Thank you, sir. Ms. Vaconite, please introduce yourself.
Yep, my name is Crystal Vaconite. I am one of Diana's PCAs. I also have a brother with a disability, so I've grown up with disability in my life from day one. I've worked in an in-home position like I have with Diana, where I go into Diana's home to help with her therapies. I also have worked with other families in-home and have experience in the group home setting, so I'm very familiar with kind of the realm of services available to persons like Diana who have a disability. A couple of the things that have led us to this bill was starting a couple years ago, I believe it was 2008, the state and the county have been making some cuts to the PCA program, which has directly affected Diana. At the time before any of Diana's hours were cut, she was receiving 14 and a half hours per day, which leaves the remaining, you know, 19 and a half hours, or I'm sorry, not 19 and a half, but the remaining 9.5 hours of the day for Diana's mother and father to provide her care by themselves. At the time the cuts were made, she was lost 2.5 hours of her daily hours, which brought the McKenzies to 12 hours a day in which they received support from a PCA to assist with Diana's therapies. Because Diana's father works outside the home, and the therapies require that two people participate with Diana to properly perform the therapy, that meant that those hours that a PCA were there were the only hours that Diana could receive therapy. So when the original cuts were made, we did make an appeal to try to have the hours reinstated. And we were denied the appeal. We went down and spoke and provided our evidence as to why we felt that it was important Diana remain at her 14 and a half hours. And then we appealed that decision as well. And we were basically told in both of our appeals that short of changing the law, the assessment tool stands alone in determining what Diana receives for assistance. And because the assessment, according to the assessment guidelines, was completed properly, there was nothing that could be done to help Diana get those couple hours a day back. And I understand that 2.5 hours might not sound like a lot, but in somebody like Diana's life, 2.5 hours is a lot. In the span of a week, that adds up quickly. And for Diana to continue to receive her therapies and continue to improve, as Joanne had mentioned, it's very important that she have somebody there to support her. There were a couple other things that we've come across as well. Diana used to be able to go to respite care so that her mom, who provides her care pretty much all day, every day, could have a small break. And in 2007, there was an incident of neglect in the respite care facility where Diana would stay, and it was investigated and came back inconclusive. So I'm sure you understand McKenzie's no longer send her daughter to that facility. Unfortunately, Ramsey County cannot provide another respite care facility for Diana. So since 2007, there has not been a break. You know, McKenzie's can't really leave Diana very long with one PCA because Diana also has a seizure disorder. And if Diana were to have a seizure and not be able to breathe, it's pretty hard for a PCA to maintain taking care of Diana and call 911 and get the help to the house that's needed. So understandably, the parents aren't comfortable leaving, you know, overnight or for an entire day to leave Diana in a PCA's care. And also, Diana has to have assistance for transfers to use the bathroom and such that it's difficult for a PCA to perform on their own. Also, within the assessment tool, there is no definition between someone who's quadriplegic and paraplegic. So obviously, someone who's quadriplegic, like Diana, doesn't have enough use of her arms or her legs to provide assistance to herself. So for instance, you know, Diana can't feed herself, Diana can't take herself to the bathroom, where someone who's a paraplegic and has use of their arms can at least perform some of their daily tasks on their own, so they're not completely reliant on the assistance of others. So the primary point of the bill that we're discussing today is for families like Diana's family who are providing these therapies that are making such a difference and in reality are somewhat of a preventative care. The longer we keep Diana and people like Diana healthy, the less money it is going to cost the state, the smaller the impact will be. We all know that people with disabilities are living longer and longer with the advances in our healthcare systems that are keeping them healthy longer. And just like any of us, the better care we take care of ourselves now, the less impact it's going to have on everybody later. So with a family being able to have a little bit of extra funds to provide these therapies for their children or their loved ones in their homes, it's going to cost us less money down the road as well as now. And like Senator Wieger mentioned earlier in the flyer that you have in your packet, the information there with Diana's picture on it, this one here with the financial information, shows some of the costs in a year and some of the costs over a lifetime. Like the dental cost is something that's more than 1 year of dental costs rolled into that. But it shows some of the costs that families like Mackenzie's have been saving our state for years. And with the times being the way they are and the budget being the way it is, I know that we're all looking to save money, not just for the state, but in our own homes as well. So to be able to provide the money to people like Mackenzie's and other families is really going to improve the care of people who deserve it and also save our state money at the same time.
Thank you, Ms. Van Ken Knight. Any questions for the witness? Senator Benson.
First of all, I'd like to commend you, Mrs. Mackenzie, and Diana as well for being here today.
Thank you.
I know it's a struggle sometimes to get out. My nephew was born with partial trisomy 18 complicated by cerebral palsy, and my sister takes care of him with some respite care and PCA assistance, so I empathize with your situation. So please don't take any of my comments as not being so respectful of the fact that you have made it a priority to care for your daughter. That's a tremendous sacrifice, and I thank you for that. A couple of questions. Why just A Chance to Grow, and why just Ramsey County eligible? Not for you, Mrs. Mackenzie, but okay. Senator Wieger, I apologize.
Senator Wieger?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Benson. I selected Ramsey County because that's where I learned about this, and because there's an appropriation, I realized if we made it statewide, we could certainly make it statewide, and if you wanted to have multiple counties, that's fine with me. I wanted to keep it as targeted as possible, but I'm very open for broadening that. But it was just more of the financial reality. For A Chance to Grow, it was suggested to me that that was the appropriate organization. I am just meeting the representative from that organization today. You know, there is a rep here. Erica Dickerson, she can raise her hand if there's questions about the organization, but the funds would go through that organization ultimately to through the county, and but I think we have to establish some organization.
We have been involved with
Ms.
the chance.
McKenzie.
Oops, sorry. We've been involved with the Chance to Grow for 24 years, and that's why A Chance to Grow was chosen.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Van Kenite.
Speaking from the perspective of a PCA, a personal care attendant, A Chance to Grow is a little bit different agency where they are focused a little more on the therapy end of programs such as these. So that's another reason that A Chance to Grow was an agency that we looked to. They're, they encourage the therapy and some of the alternative options more so than pushing medications and completely conventional medicine.
Thank you. Senator Wieger, I know you've, I'm sorry, Senator Benson, go ahead.
I just had one follow-up. Given that we have
Diana,
plenty of people who are cared for in home versus institutions, not that I don't think this is worthy, but is there any way we can do an evaluation of the population we have without incurring some of these expenses, small as they are? Is there any way we can do an evaluation of those systems? I believe home care is best for those who are in need, but if we already have the information, let's get it out here and make some decisions so we can make policy going forward.
Thank you. Senator Wieger, any comment, or do we want to hear from the other testifiers?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, I believe that the county who is poised to testify next could elaborate further on potential savings. We can't make a guarantee. We can speculate, though, that if you're at home and you understand. And I just might also, I listened to your hearing, watched your hearing yesterday, and my heart just went out when I listened to the part about potentially $40 million documented in potential fraud for PCAs on the bill you're carrying. And you know, that's outrageous, if whatever that number might be. This is money that goes right to Diana for her caregivers, and it is closely monitored by the county, because I asked them that. Accountability was very important to me in the evaluation, and Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I believe that the next testifier could comment further on that.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Let's invite, is it Andrea Zuber, Ramsey County Commissioner, and then there's a representative from A Chance to Grow, maybe if she would like to join us as well, and maybe make a few comments. But
thank you, Mr. Chair, and Andrea Zuber.
Please identify yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Andrea Zuber, and I'm the manager for Disability Services at Ramsey County. I was asked to testify today on behalf of Commissioner Victoria Reinhart, who is ill today and was unable to be here. So, as you've heard, Diana has muscle and bone characteristics that continually restrict her range of motion without the intensive daily therapies. When the new PCA assessment tool was introduced, the number of daily hours, as has been mentioned before, for assistance for these therapies and other tasks was reduced for her. And that left the family in a situation where, for the first time after caring for Diana for over 20 years, they had to actually start considering, is this mean that we might have to start looking at out-of-home placement for her in order to maintain those intensive therapies? And my understanding is that that's something that they definitely don't want to do, and we have seen that it's more cost-effective to support people in their own homes with family support as opposed to the costly out-of-home placement. So this bill, my understanding is, was developed to provide an opportunity to both track and measure how those intensive therapy services increase her physical flexibility, and then also would provide us an opportunity to study whether the PCA savings are valid or whether or not they're just being shifted to a different place with the out-of-home placement costs. That would be more.
Thank you. Ms. Zuber, Senator Berkland.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
I'm Andrea Zuber.
Ms. Zuber, could you give me an idea of how many people there might be in Ramsey County that would be wanting to have their hours or their pay for their personal attendant increased based on the criteria in this bill?
Ms. Zuber?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I actually don't have those numbers with me. I know that in terms of people with needs similar to Diana's, there's probably a small number. But in terms of numbers of people who had their PCA hours reduced based on the new eligibility criteria, there's many. I don't have the numbers with me. I could get that information for you.
Senator Berglund.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Zuber, the reason I ask the question is because the PCA program, as you know, being a Medicaid service, has to be statewide. So if we were going to do a pilot program, we'd need to think about how much it would cost and whether we could afford to expand it statewide at some point in the near future. And I just think we need to think about how many potential people there might be statewide so that we could make an assessment of whether it would be affordable.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. That is a good point, and as we look at this bill, that may be something we ought to consider finding out. Maybe perhaps someone from the department can help us make some assessment, or we may have to invite input from the counties if we're going to take this on. And I'm not sure, even Senator Berglund, if we would need to get some waiver to establish a pilot of this nature. That's unclear to me at this point.
Well,
so, Senator Berglund?
I think we would need a waiver if we want any federal funding involved in it. My understanding of the way the bill is structured now, it would be all state funding, and so it would just be kind of a pilot program for a few people, and it wouldn't have any medical assistance for the add-on pieces. So I don't think that would need a waiver, but if you're going to do it for very many people, it would obviously have to be done as a part of the regular Medicaid program.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was out of the room for a few minutes, so this might have been addressed. But I'm wondering, is there a way that we could do a cost comparison to the people that are being taken care of in their homes, which, you know, we've established is cheaper, versus the institutionalized people that, or maybe people like Diana that may have to be institutionalized? Is there a way we can do a cost comparison even in the pilot area? I don't know if that's been addressed before. Is that something that's possible?
Senator Wigger, any comment on, or Ms. Zuber?
I'll ask Mr. Chair, Ms. Zuber, to reflect on that.
Ms. Zuber?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that there is assessment that we could do to look at that, and I think it's something that the counties would need to work in conjunction with the Department of Human Services on.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the department is here and can also further elaborate, recognizing time short and that there's several weeks where we can still review it. And I do have to my right Ms. Dickerson from Chance to Grow, if you'd like to hear.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Wigger. And Ms. Dickerson, would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Sure. My name is Erica Dickerson. I'm the Director of Clinical and Home-Based Services for A Chance to Grow. A Chance to Grow is a primarily pediatric nonprofit in Northeast Minneapolis. The McKenzies have been a part of our family, as she said, for over 20 years. They are by far one of our most dedicated families, but we certainly have other families who are just as dedicated and put in as many hours with their children at home. One of our goals, one of our many goals, is to make sure that parents are trained and empowered in the care of their children from the everyday feeding and grooming and toileting types of things, but also the therapies. Some of them are rather intense, many, many hours a day. The McKenzies have committed to that for over 20 years. They are to be commended, as you had said, Senator Benson. They are what is keeping Diana in the state she's in now. And it's our hope that we can reach as many families as we can, and we try.
Thank you, Mr. Dickerson. And Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, does your organization ever work with families to be in the consumer support program where they have more flexibility about the dollars that they receive, how they're used?
Ms. Dickerson.
We do, but I know that many of the recipients of the consumer support grant typically leave our agency. And
I can't hear you.
They typically leave the agency and then do a lot of that work on their own.
Thank you. Members, just to note, if you haven't seen there is a fiscal note attached to the bill. It's looks like about a little over $50,000 cost going forward. I believe you, Senator Wigger, has asked us to consider this in our omnibus bill, and so I'm going to lay the bill over for further consideration, and perhaps some of the questions that Senator Berglund has been asking, we can gain some additional information about this, and we will consider this in our final bill. But we appreciate, Senator Wieger, you bringing the bill forward, and your testifiers appreciate the chance to hear the story. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we deeply appreciate the opportunity. The McKenzies, they don't have hired lobbyists, or, you know, this was their day. And please hear us.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Wieger. And members, before we conclude, Senator Rosen has indicated that she's had some further conversation and would like to take up off the table her bill for some final action before we conclude the meeting. Thank you, Senator Wieger, and testifiers appreciate your being here today.
Thank you.
And we will lay the bill over. Thank you. Senator Rosen, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't know if we need a motion, members, to take the bill up. I think we've had just laid the bill. No formal motion was made, so we'll invite Senator Rosen to take up the bill again, and let's...
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did have a good discussion out there with the department and with the stakeholders, the Nurses Association. They were not aware of the A4 amendment as of this morning, so I think a lot of their concerns have been addressed in the A4 amendment. Back to Senator Berglund's issue with the cost savings, and as the department said, there was like $50,000 for the community health workers, and it's very hard to get your hands around a savings or a fiscal note on this because you don't have a test pilot project, and it is really up to the medical director, the ambulance medical director, and that community, and who will be targeted, because as Dr. Wilcox said, it is kind of an extension of the medical home and continuum of care. So I believe, and everybody that has been working on this bill believes, there will be cost savings. It's just very difficult to get your hands around it at this time. And I think that once we have a report back next January, we'll have a better idea of what's going on with this.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, my understanding was that the savings for the community health worker was low because there weren't very many of them anticipated during that budget period to be able to provide services. But I think in your case, there would be more people more quickly. Mm-hmm. And so was that discussed with the department in terms of a potential fiscal note?
Right. Senator Rosen?
Chair and Senator Berglund. It was, and that still does pose a question. I mean, who is going to participate in this, and how many patients are going to be available? We all know, and I'm sure the director, Dr. Wilcox, could mention how it's worked in his area as far as targeting the specific patient. We could also bring up the department if you'd like on that, but I think it's going to be larger than what we expect, mm-hmm. but it's just very difficult to get a fiscal note on that. The other thing was there was some questions outside about in committee about the continuum of care and patients' referral, everybody talking together. So as on page 1, line 28, the coordination with the patient's primary care physician was important, and it was recommended that we continue that line of thought on page 2, line 13. And Ms. Kavanaugh has some language, but after must be a part or must be in conjunction with a patient's primary care physician instead of patient care plan. Ms. Kavanaugh.
Senator Rosen, thank you. And Ms. Kavanaugh, could you read this verbal amendment, oral amendment?
Yep. Mr. Chair, let's go back on page 1. On page 1, line 29, delete care. So it would be the patient's primary physician, and before the period, insert and the relevant local health care providers, comma, including the local hospital and public health agency.
Okay.
And then on page 2, line 13, after plan, insert that has been developed in coordination with the patient's primary physician and relevant local health care providers.
Thank you, Ms. Kavanaugh. Members, any questions on the oral amendment? Do we understand what Senator Rosen is wishing to do in the amendment?
Mr. Chair, it's just to continue the coordination, make sure everybody's talking what you would do in a medical home.
Thank you, Senator Rosen.
Move that oral amendment.
Senator Rosen moves the oral amendment. Any questions, discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And the other issue, I guess I'd like to have Dr. Wilcox just address a little of the public health nurse question. I mean, there's a shortage of them already. This is not a competition. This is just an added value, basically, what we're trying to find cost savings. And Dr. Wilcox just has a few comments about the savings and also about the accreditation. There were some questions. Is this an accredited course, and do they have a test, and how are we make sure that they are up to the caliber that they should be?
Dr. Wilcox.
Thank you, Senator. Relative to the question about interaction with public health, nursing services, and so on, I can assure you that these providers, the CPs, would very much coordinate their work with the public health folks within their counties. And quite frankly, in the work that I've done in the rural counties in the southern part of the state, public health services there are stretched to the limit with the number of clients that they're asked to deal with right now. And many of the public health nurses that I've interacted with in these counties would welcome having assistance with a community paramedic to assist them in coordinating this care, especially in home care. Public health nurses would like, I'm sure, to do more work in homes, but unfortunately, because of their time limits and so on and the other work they're expected to do, they haven't really had an opportunity to do that. So there definitely would be ongoing coordination with public health nursing. I think we're all going to find, as we continue on with our health care work in the future, all of us, whether we're nurses, physicians, CPs, PAs, nurse practitioners, we're all going to have plenty of time and plenty of opportunity to continue to work doing what's best for our patients in our communities. Now, relative to the accreditation issue, I would like to emphasize that the curriculum that we are using is an internationally developed curriculum, and it will be universally taught in all of our MNSCU institutions, and it will provide coursework for our participants so that if indeed they find that they would like to leave our state and work in another state, or they would like to do something internationally, be it Canada, New Zealand, Australia, where they utilize these providers already heavily, they would already have the curriculum in place to allow them to do that. Now, it is a relatively unique program, however, in our country at this point, and to be sure, there is no test that's been developed for them to complete prior to the time that they would be asked to do their work. However, I would emphasize that these individuals will practice under a medical director's license. And quite frankly, I, as a medical director, would not allow these individuals to work under my license if I had not worked with them one-on-one and found them to have skills that were appropriate for the care of the patients in which I would ask them to deal with.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Wilcox. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
I just have one more question for Senator Rosen. I believe me, I do support this bill, but I do think we have to do our due diligence here. And so I do just have to ask if, since we have not received a fiscal note from the Department of Human Services yet, whether this evaluation that they have to do will carry any cost with it.
Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, there will be no cost, and we get an affirmative from the department and the working group that is formulating for the next year will come with the data, too, along with the department. So. No, there isn't. And I do want to reemphasize that this was developed by the Mayo Clinic. So this is not, this is pretty impressive work that's been done.
Well, I know so. That. I know that. But whenever we see...
Senator Berglund, go ahead.
Whenever we see some additional work in a bill that's being requested of the Department of Human Services, we do need to ask if it's going to have a fiscal note before we let it go.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize for being out of the room so much today. It's Fergus Falls Day at the Capitol, so my constituents are here.
I did not know
here.
That.
Yes, it is. They don't advertise themselves well. I just want to say that in my practice, I find this is a really exciting idea. I have practiced in a rural hospital. I've seen the frequent flyers come through the door in our ambulances. I worked with the medics and the EMTs that are going to be actually doing this. I've talked to my local people. They're excited about this because we're underutilizing in the rural part of the state our medics that are on call. And I mean, I just see a lot of potential for savings there, a lot of potential if you're going to look at the money part of it. But the other side of it is I see enhanced patient care, and I'm really excited to support this bill. Coming from the side of having practiced for many, my whole career in a rural hospital. So thank you for bringing this, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Senator Hoffman, you said it better than Senator I could Rosen. Have said this the whole time, the last hour. So thank you very much.
Senator Rosen, before we take action on your bill, do we want to hear from the department? Any comment to Senator Berglund's question? Can we confirm that there is no cost to do a report? Are you willing to at least verbally make us some commitment that we don't have a fiscal note related to the cost of a report?
Afternoon, Dave Greenman with the Department of Human Services. We anticipate that we will be able to do this without a cost.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And Senator Rosen, your wish now is to move the bill. Is that correct?
Yes, I would. I move that Senate File 119 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor for a final vote since there is no fiscal note.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you.
Members, that is the motion. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion is adopted. And thank you for your patience, members.
Well, thank
and
you,
we
Mr.
are adjourned.
Chair and members.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work on this.